assemble!
It's back and bigger than ever. It's the unofficial 40 from Soonerscoop.com. Now, here's the entire Sooner Scoop crew, Carrie, Josh, Eddie, and Bob.
All right, welcome back. It is another edition of the Unofficial 40. It is the Cheez-It Bowl edition of the Unofficial 40 as Eddie Radosovich and Bob Prisbillo have, they're there. They are there. Southwest could not stop them. Well, they actually did stop them from getting there. And they had to get a rental car from Atlanta and drive like it was supposed to be 6 hours, ended up being 9 hours because of traffic. And the world has lost its collective minds. I'm Carrie Murdoch, joined by Eddie Radosovich and Bob Prisbillo from Orlando. Josh McQuiston is with us. He will be in Orlando coming up, maybe, possibly. We don't know if Eddie and Bob are ever going to be able to come home, but there is a bowl game tomorrow night at the Cheez-It Bowl. All the media has been done. And gentlemen, welcome into another podcast that I forgot to record in the beginning.
Hey, the good news is, folks, we only made it in like 10 minutes. So I feel like that's halfway a win. But yes, they the media responsibilities are done for, I guess, leading up to the bowl game. I had the joint press conference today. It's been pretty low key, Bob. We went out to practice yesterday. 40 minutes to an hour to Drake and Braden Willis. A little bit of news on the Drake Stoops front with him returning for 2023, but we'll see. I mean, it doesn't feel like this is going to be much of a game on Thursday night, but it kind of is what it is.
It feels a little flipped from last year where you sort of thought with Caleb Williams staying at quarterback, Oregon didn't stand a chance. And that's exactly how that game played out. It feels like OU's the one that doesn't really have a shot at whatever it's going to try to accomplish Thursday. And it's just more about make sure no one gets seriously hurt and let's see what some of those young guys can do.
I think it would have been a bad matchup with Oklahoma not having three offensive linemen out, with them having Eric Gray, with them having Jalen Redmond. You take a bunch of those guys out and the offensive firepower, it's going to be interesting to see what they what kind of run game they're going to be able to produce with Javonte Barnes getting a load of the carries. And are we going to see Gavin Sawchuk? I know that we've talked about the younger guys within the program getting certainly a big opportunity going into 2023. And, you know, it's definitely not the end-all be-all that they walk out of here with a win, but they're going to be playing in what will probably be 90% Florida State fans. They've definitely embraced the moniker of kind of being the underdog that nobody thinks are going to have much of a chance come Thursday night.
Here's something for you. Do you think that we will have a pretty good understanding of who's coming back and who is not by how much they feature a certain player offensively? Like, if they go out there and just try and get Braden Willis as many catches as possible, wouldn't that kind of signal that they're cool with Marvin Mims and he's coming back and Dylan Gabriel's coming back and we all know Drake's coming back, but I think that's going to be something kind of interesting to watch. And maybe even with that offensive line and some of those youngsters, how many of those guys play to where Bill Beedenbo's kind of sending a message like, okay, next year's your year.
I just don't know if they're, I mean, are you going to like quote unquote bench a Chris Murray? So somebody like a,
or Savion Bird.
Savion
Bird bench, but play them,
like,
play
I
them more.
I would love to see that.
Yeah, I'm not talking about benching, but just getting them more in the rotation.
Are they going to do that, though, if you're trying to chase points? I just don't think that's going to happen.
I think it's going to be, I would love to say that there
would be an opportunity for that to happen.
I think it's going to be more interesting, most likely, just seeing if they decide to take certain people out, at halftime or something like that. Like, don't play Marvin Mims after halftime because,
What I'm wondering about is how Jeff Lebby goes about it. Do you try to just shorten this game and make it quick and painless? Or does he try to have some fun and be very free, do a lot of trick plays, and see if you can create some fireworks? Let's be vanilla. Let's just get through it. We know we don't have our pieces. Let's call as basic a plan as possible with some new players and see if they can do it. Or did he just say, you know what, no one expects us to do anything here. Let's go out and have some fun.
It better not
be vanilla.
I mean,
if it's the former and they just go out there with a plain – if they go out there with a plain offense and just try to get through, they fire every fucking person on – seriously. That would be the most offensive thing that you could possibly do to a bunch of seniors like a Braden Willis is just go out there and know that you're going to get your ass kicked.
Yeah, you would hope that they just let it loose.
They've done it once this year already.
They did it against Texas. Exactly. Like, we know that this
is... Yeah, Dylan Gabriel was dead.
Yeah, with Dylan Gabriel...
They should literally shoot every person on the staff if that happens.
No, I don't... I mean, I hope that they just air it out and just, you know, do some crazy shit and all that. I mean, it's a 4:30 game. I mean, it's it needs some eyeballs, attention. You might as well make it a shootout if you can. Because... Florida State's going to score some points.
I think that that's what they would try to do. Yeah, I think you're going to have – they're going to obviously going to have to score some points. I mean, I don't think Oklahoma's going to be able to slow down Jordan Travis and the Florida State offense. If you're going to win this game, you have to – I guess the perfect recipe would be forcing a couple turnovers somehow, and you got to capitalize. Every time that Florida State – I mean, it's the classic, like, underdog – game plan. You got to be able to take advantage of every opportunity. Unfortunately for Oklahoma, every time that that's happened this year, they haven't been able to do that. I just don't know why it would all of a sudden come to come together.
You know, it was interesting out there this week, and you know, they had four guys that are early enrollees, and they were able to come out and practice. And you wrote about this, Bob, but those guys came out and practiced. Brent invited everyone, but there are some guys that didn't want to come out because that would have made them ineligible for some of the All-Star game. Like a Jackson Arnold couldn't come out.
Exactly.
Couldn't come out because then he couldn't be in the Under Armour All-American game.
I know. Like, you're asking them enough to skip their senior semester of high school to show up early. Now you've taken them away from the Under Armour or the All-American Bowl in San Antonio. And I like that he clarified that because I think there had been some people wondering, well, why these four? You know, it wasn't based on location. It wasn't like they were all like kids in Florida, so it made sense. Like, oh, all right, well, if you're in an All-Star game, but you go to these bowl practices, then you're not eligible to participate. Okay, that makes a lot more sense as to why this was the group of four that showed up. And it's funny to think, like, Derek LeBlanc and how much of a, like, beast he looks like on high school film. And you see him at practice, and you get an idea of, like, that's the type of steps, that type of conditioning and improvement he's going to have to make to try to become a defensive tackle for OU. It's like, it's not just going to happen overnight. No matter how good this recruiting class seems like it's going to be, there's still going to be steps in along the way that everyone's going to have to take before they can be – who OU needs them to be like now.
Well, and like it kind of goes back to spring for me when you saw some of those guys like Kobe McKenzie, and you know, you're like, well, that's a big guy for a freshman, but he's still, you know, he's kind of got extra weight.
Yeah.
You know, he's not cut. Like when I saw him out there in the bowl prep practices, looked like a much more refined, you know, just player body type. Like he looked like he belonged, because I was like, he was wearing number 4 because he was doing scout team stuff. And I think I went up to you, Eddie, and I was like, that's Kobe McKenzie, right? And you're like, you're like, yeah, that is. Like, he, not that it was a big transformation, but it was enough of a transformation to say, like, okay, he looks like a college football player now.
It kind of reminded me of being, like, specifically about LeBlanc, like, Bob just kind of, it reminds me of when we go to those rivals camps and we see a kid that is a really good looking body, and you go, well, if he's like a freshman or a sophomore, he might end up being somebody. It kind of reminds me of that. Like, you just know that those guys are going to go through those body transformations over the next, you know, 6 months to a year. And he looks different than, say, and I'm not picking on a guy, it's just like a Jordan Kelly, like long armed. It looks like somebody that, you know, could be a somebody when he's all said and done, when he goes through a full year of Jerry Schmidt and kind of transforming his body into what you would expect a college football player to look like.
So, I mean, outside of that, was it kind of the same thing seeing, you know, the bowl prep practices as much as it was seeing the Cheez-It practices? Like, you could just tell that these guys are down a lot of people.
Yeah, they're down a lot of people, but it was good to confirm and see, like, they're not down anyone else. They didn't, like, no one got here and then got hurt. You know, there's still, you're missing Major and Andrew Rame and Shane Witter and Jaden Rowe, Calvin Gilliam. You're like, you're missing all those pieces that weren't even in the portal. But at least when you got to Florida, you didn't all of a sudden just lose a couple others trying to go through these practices.
I will say, I all things considered, and the way that the season went, and just kind of talking to the guys afterwards and seeing how they interact and all that kind of stuff, it does seem like it's like, I think that, I don't know about a news on life or anything like that, but it does seem like, at the very least, that, and it, I guess it kind of goes on par with everything that we've heard this throughout this season. They really do enjoy being around each other. Who knows? Maybe they go out there and kind of put it all together tomorrow night. I find it hard to believe that. I'll have to see it to believe it, I guess, is what I'm trying to say.
I got to say, Eddie and Bob are broadcasting from their hotel in Orlando. And it's not a perfect connection, but Eddie, it really does sound like you are just surrounded in a room full of cocaine. Because it, like, slows down and then speeds up, and you just seem it just seems like you are... You're
it's
out of your
just
mind
me.
Right now.
Okay, no. I've been hearing that with Eddie the whole time. I'm like, what's going on?
I don't know. I have no idea. Maybe Southwest Airlines is trying to really fuck me over after kind of fucking us over.
Well, we talked about that in the pod that wasn't. You guys, you were fortunate. And it's weird to say this, but
oh yeah,
there was a whole thing that happened when you guys got to the airport. And what did you tell me that your trolley guy told you?
Oh, like when the guy that picked me up and I had all these bags and I took the shuttle to get into the terminal, into like the front gates. And he picked me up and was like, he'll ask like, where'd you park? And
yeah,
like,
what airport?
You know, road, whatever.
What airport, yeah.
He gives me the... in Oklahoma City. And he gives me the little thing. He's like, all right, what airline? And I said Southwest. And he just started laughing and was like, oh boy, you're in for it. And I kind of knew that, like, that was the beginning of what had been obviously a social media buzz with Southwest and flights being canceled and pushed back. And this is on top of our flight already being pushed back for 3 hours. So we kind of knew what we were getting into. And, you know, it eventually just got to the point where, you know, I had called you on the way out. Bob had called me, and it was kind of a, you know, what the hell are we going to do? And it ultimately got to the point where it was like, we either need to get on this plane right now and kind of know that we're going to be stuck in Atlanta at some point, or
try
and hold off and get in Wednesday. And, you know, I think we made the right decision. It sucked at the time. We ended up driving from Atlanta down to Orlando in a rental car, but it kind of is what it is. All things considered, we got all of our bags. We have all of our equipment here. It just, I don't know. It was an event that we survived, and we're going to be able to tell tales about at some point. It's kind of fun.
Well, and it was
one day we'll laugh. Just not yet.
It was also, right. It was one of those things where I was trying to help you guys as much as I could. And Eddie, you and I were talking and I was like, concerned. I was, because there was a question like, should we get on this flight that apparently is going to take off, not knowing if we're going to make our connection in Atlanta. And so I think we found out it was so bad and there were so many flights being canceled that we just needed to get you as close to Orlando as possible. Yet, I didn't know how you guys felt about it. Eddie kind of, he rallied the troops. He's like, yes, let's get on this fucking plane. Let's just go. Let's get as close to Orlando as we can. Meanwhile, I said, well, what's Bob doing right now? And Eddie was like, I don't know. And I was like, what do you mean you don't know? He's like, he's just standing over there. And I was really concerned that Bob was just going to be like, nah, fuck it, I'm not going.
The reason I could do that is because I didn't bring any checked bags. So I was going to hold, how long can I stay in this line before I need to get through security, and I'm TSA pre-check. So I was like, I can go in this line a lot longer than anyone else, because once I decide to go, it's only going to take me a couple minutes.
Yeah. I really was concerned at one point that Bob was no longer going to be working for us, that he was just going to throw his hands up and say, yeah, this shit.
So I was like,
I'm out of here.
Like, this line's starting to move because people are going to the self-serve. Can I get to talk to an agent before I need to start boarding? And
it was so messed up because you guys were getting to Atlanta, and like, I was driving back from my parents' place in Frisco, and you know, I was every 30 minutes I was refreshing the flight track or the flight list, and it kept, like, the Oklahoma City flight would get pushed back, but so would the Atlanta flight, so they were still matching up to where you'd have like 40 minutes and they were in the same gate. But then all of a sudden, I get to, like, Paul's Valley, and the Atlanta flight moved up, like, 2 hours. And so there was – you weren't going to land before that plane took off. And then we started having to make hard decisions. I thought, well, I'll find him a hotel. And so then I started looking at hotels in Atlanta, and it showed that there were hotels, but people were buying them so fast. And this was, like, 11:45 at night. So it's like, I'm up against it because at midnight, I can't book anything online for that night. So I'm scrambling. I'm noticing that every damn hotel is out in Atlanta that's even 25 miles close to the airport. And so then I think the next logical thing is book a car, get a car. And so I actually did that before I gave up on the hotels, thinking that you guys would be able to get a night's sleep and I'd get you a rental at 8 a.m. and then you'd be able to drive. Well, it turns out you couldn't get a hotel, so you had to – you basically became Tom Hanks in that movie where he lived in the airport.
The terminal, yes. Yep, just slept on the floor for a little bit, like 30 minutes at a time, wake up, walk around.
And so what happened was I rented with Hertz because they had cars, and I figured they're not going to have cars online if they don't really have them. And, like, it was great because, you know, I was telling people about it online and they were giving me suggestions and people were like, hey, the Avis counter is a 24-hour counter. And so I call Eddie and I'm like, hey, Eddie, the Avis counter is a 24-hour counter. And he's like, yeah, I know. He's like, there's a huge line. That's a special circle of hell that I want nothing to do with right now.
Yeah. The only thing that I, like, truly was worried about from a sleeping standpoint at the airport was I was going to wake up to some, and maybe this is, like, the most American thought ever, wake up to someone that just had finally had enough and had decided to bring a gun up to the airport and end everybody's life.
Well, you were fortunate because you were able to get your bag that you had checked in Atlanta. Like, I can't imagine that was a pretty scene down by baggage claim.
It's a complete disaster. I went over there and was helping Ryan Aberhood. They got stuck. Him and Jesse Crittenden from the Norm Transcript got stuck in St. Louis, and they actually drove from St. Louis to Orlando. And so I went over there yesterday when I took the rental car back to help them try to find Ryan Aber's bag. And, like, just looking at the scene and the people's faces, like, there was this one lady. They live in Orlando. They got back on, I want to say, Sunday. They got back to Orlando, to where they live, and they had been up there the last 3 days trying to get their bags that are in the airport, and they had not been able to get them yet because nobody knew where they were. But the bags were in the airport somewhere. Like, the amount of incompetence on part of Southwest this week has been kind of glorious. Like, if you can find humor in the darkness, that... It's just incompetent. It's an incompetent company right now.
By the way, I want to get back to this. I want to say this though. I know a lot of you have been, you know, spending. Some of you, if you haven't been on Southwest, have been spending time with your families. Probably doing a lot of cooking, a lot of big meals. I know, you know, last couple of weeks I've done a lot of cooking for the family, and they've done a lot of cooking for me. If you want to just get back to some normalcy. Just find it easy to cook something and get it quickly and on the run. go check out PrimeShrimp.com, one of our great sponsors. It's simple. You pick from all the different flavors that they have, and they have the brand new New Orleans style barbecue shrimp pack. But you just boil some water. You put it in there less than 10 minutes. There's no thaw, no mess, no fuss. Restaurant quality results at home in that amount of time, 10 minutes or less. You can cook up some pasta with it, some rice, whatever you want to do. Just really, I know this time of year, it's just nice to have an easy, quick, you know, delicious meal prepared for you at home without all the mess and the fuss. So go check them out, PrimeShrimp.com. Use your promo code SoonerScoop. You'll get $20 off your first order, and you can order. You can try the New Orleans-style barbecue shrimp pack. Also, all their other great flavors, like the French Quarter Alfredo, the garlic herb and butter, the signature seasoned Cajun shrimp pack, also the lemon and cracked peppers. So go check them out, PrimeShrimp.com. Use that promo code SoonerScoop. Get $20 off your first order. All right, so here's the really scary part. If you guys do leave Orlando, coming in behind you is one Josh McQuistion, who already has tickets on a Southwest flight for like months now to go see the Under Armour practices.
Yeah, I have that to look forward to. And again, everything I'm reading and hearing, I keep thinking like, oh, tomorrow will be the day things
they'll
will
get
start
it all sorted
straighten out.
Yeah.
And every day it's just more of a shit show from Southwest. And it's, and I hate it because Southwest in Houston, for those that don't know, there's two airports. One's very convenient. One is very not for where I live and is enormous. Anyway, IAH, George Bush up in North Houston, and Hobby is closer to my house. It's very easy. And you know, you just in and out and you, and I know Southwest. I fly it. I know all the drills of the airport. I know where I want to park, everything like that. But I have booked other arrangements and am not super excited about it. But, it, you know, we got to go. There's like eight guys in OU's class that are going to be at the Under Armour. So we just kind of can't afford to miss that. And so I've had to make some alternative options. Now, I will say I still haven't canceled my Southwest flight because I'm still holding out hope that that much cheaper flying option is available to me.
They've cost people so much. But I'll say, you know, I do radio in the mornings with Curtis Fitzpatrick. His family flew Southwest to New York, and they were there. They were going to fly back on Christmas Day and have the kids get presents and stuff. Well, they got stuck. And the guy at the rental counter told them that they're only renting cars to people that return them to the airport. But his rental agent was kind enough to tell him, yeah, just tell us that's what you're doing. And here in a couple hours, call the reservation line and tell them you're going to take it somewhere else. And so he drove from New York to Oklahoma City in a, I want to say it was like a Chevy Malibu with his entire family. His daughter got sick and threw up in the back on the way, and apparently puke freezes really fast. But it cost them over $1,700 just to rent that car.
That's insane.
That is insane.
Guys, talk about
so
yourself.
How long did it take them to go across? Hold like, on. Was it like two, 3 days?
Hold on just a second. Talk amongst yourselves.
All right. Well, guys, I guess for me, as far as like, I haven't had a chance to watch all of it, but just watching the staff and, you know, kind of Brent go through his stuff. I mean, is there a vibe about the team? Like, or is it kind of like, I mean, do they seem to carry our sentiment that this is going to be a bit of a shit show?
I'm kind of somewhere in between.
Yep.
Rob, what do you think? Like, I think it's one of those things. It's like they're happy to be here. Everybody loves being around each other for another week. They're going to try their best. But at the end of the day, I just don't know if they have enough horses. Like, I truly just don't know if they have enough to be or enough answers to be able to come up and beat what I think is a pretty damn good football team. Like, if they can rally the troops and if they're able to be super competitive on Thursday night, I'm not going to be making any grand statements about it, but I think that that is a major, major positive for the direction of the program. Even in a losing effort, if they're able to just go out there and play well. But Like, they've played well at times this year. It's just every time that they were able to get momentum within a game, every time that they were given an opportunity to go win a football game, they didn't do it. And for that to change over the course of a month, and now you're down five, you know, basically five starters, even a sixth if you want to throw in Theo Weiss, I have a hard time thinking that it's all going to come together if I'm being realistic about this situation.
And what people have to remember, OU didn't earn its way into this bowl game. They got picked because of the brand. Like, this was an uneven matchup to begin with, because Florida State should be playing, what, like Texas Tech probably? Like, if you actually based it upon the standings and how things worked out and the way that it should have went. So OU shouldn't be here and is down starters. And so it's just like, what could you possibly expect them to be able to do? Now, as Eddie has said, it's very clear this team enjoys being around each other. Like, they've said it repeatedly. Sure. I think we've been around them enough. Like, we weren't around the last 2 years because of COVID, so we couldn't really get a feel of the camaraderie. Like, was there real chemistry, or, like, was there division? You know, was it fractured, as, you know, the way Brent phrased it when talking about when he arrived here last year? But we can say that this team is not fractured. They're just not as good as what everyone was hoping for, but they're still playing hard for each other, and that'll be the case Thursday. And it's just the fact of the matter is that even with those five guys, it was going to be a real uphill climb, and that without them, they're just going to need some incredible breaks to go their way. You know, it's like you can't play even, just like an even game with Florida State. You need them to, you know, drop a couple turnovers deep in your territory, something on special teams, like just whatever fluke plays that can happen in a game, they all need to go in your favor.
All right, sorry guys. Mailman had come, and I had to make sure. I can't let the Sooner Scoop store drop down just because Eddie's stuck in Orlando right now. So I had to get things out.
That's right.
No, but I mean, you know, the momentum of this recruiting class. Yeah, you just have to, you know, play a respectable game. And you know, I think there are going to be fans that are going to be mad that, you know, they finished 6-7. But I think if they go out there and just don't embarrass themselves. Which I don't think they will. I mean, as long as Dylan Gabriel's playing, I mean, you know, it's somebody
tried
to. I don't
think Florida State defensively is just a bunch of world beaters. No. Like, if they can get into a shootout, you just have to trust that they're not going to make the mistakes that they made repeatedly, especially late in games. And if you can avoid that, you know, pre-snap penalties, turnovers, drop passes, missed blocks, things like that.
A whole lot.
They're 6-6 for a reason.
Look at the way the season played out, though. I mean, you beat Iowa State. You lose by 3 to Baylor. You know, you lose by 3 to West Virginia, which never should have happened. You beat Oklahoma State. Then you lose by 3 to Tech. I mean, it's not like this team was getting their heads kicked in down the stretch.
No, but they were 0-4 in every game that was a one-possession game.
Yeah,
like, exactly. They didn't win a single one-possession game that they needed to. Which I think is, like, the most surprising thing about it, because that's what they had done for the last 3 or 4 years. In late-game situations, when they needed to make a play, especially on the offensive side of the football, they were able to do so. It's not like they don't know how to win. It's not 1999 again.
Yeah. While we can absolutely count on this team, I mean, from all that we've seen, to make catastrophic mistakes, they also don't let anybody run away from them, other than Texas and TCU, when the Texas one, again, is almost like an exhibition game when you look back on it. But with those exceptions, they played everybody tough. Like, they were there in every game. In some of the games, it was them that let people hang around. Like, they let people back into games. You know, Texas Tech, that game was in hand, and Oklahoma just let it fall away in like 5 minutes of the second quarter. So to me, I feel like Oklahoma winning is more likely than Oklahoma getting blown out. Like, I don't see that, because I don't think the Florida State defense is anything special. And I think Oklahoma has weapons that can take advantage of them. Now, they've got a block. I mean, to me, that's the whole question. If Oklahoma has any chance, can they slow down Florida State up front?
Yeah, I mean, they're gonna need big games from guys like Jordan Kelly. They're gonna need, I don't know, you know, what they're gonna do in terms of new guys. I mean, Eddie, you talked about seeing Marcus Stripling playing inside.
Yeah, he was back with the defense.
He was back with the ends.
Yep. Okay.
Yeah.
They gave that a look and they're like, nah, not gonna work. But yeah,
sadly, I'm kind of like
Grayson Holton.
I
mean, gonna
just
be
give him a pass. It's like I think you know what's gonna happen.
Yeah, but I mean, it's gonna be. You talked about the young guys. It's gonna be interesting to see what, you know, Grayson Holton can do from a game beginning to end standpoint, because you know he's gonna be a bigger factor than he's been all year.
Yeah.
But, I mean, that's the thing with this team and why they haven't been able to hold on the leads and haven't been able to play complimentary football is a lot of it is on that defensive line. Losing the edge, you know, just not making plays, not getting after the quarterback. So, I think a guy like Leolu. He's a guy that, you know, could be a difference maker for him, and he has been at times. So,
is it fair to say people should be more worried about the offensive line than the defensive line, though?
Yes.
Because if they're going to have any chance, I mean, Dylan Gabriel is going to have to stand upright, and you have three starters out on the offensive line. I mean, straight up, you have three starters.
Does Florida State have
and two tackles?
Scary edge guys. Because that's,
yeah,
I mean,
verse.
Let's face it, you've got essentially you're settled at the interior. It's, you know, your tackles, can they handle it?
Yeah. Tyler Guyton and Jacob Sexton, who's going to be getting his first start on Thursday night, you know, they're going to have to play really, really well. I think that, you know, Tyler Guyton's obviously played a little bit. I think there's a lot of people that feel like his future is extremely bright. Same could be said for Jacob Sexton, but same time, he's being thrown into kind of a tough spot. Starting in a bowl game as a freshman is a pretty tough ask.
Yeah, like I said, I mean, there's so much about this matchup that does not look good for Oklahoma. But if it feels like there are big plays there to be had, and again, I keep coming back, and I know I'm not the first one to have this conversation, but I keep coming back to the fact that Florida State's, you know, like, you look at the schedule, they've not done anything special. Like, you look at who they've beaten, they escaped against a bad Florida team. I mean, like, you look at the three ranked teams, are there three losses on the schedule, and one of them was Wake Forest at home. Like, I mean, don't get me wrong, Florida State should win this game, and I think they're probably 7 to 10 points better than this version of Oklahoma. But the pieces we've seen from Oklahoma at various points in the year, they can beat this Florida State team. They can. I think you'd be crazy to believe it's going to happen with all that we've seen this year.
Yeah, I think 9.5 is a number that I wouldn't feel comfortable laying that down. For Florida State, I mean, they could certainly get that number, but I don't know. I feel like it a moderately competitive game is upon us.
Yeah.
Unless the offensive line just totally sucks. Unless the offensive line just totally sucks and Javonte Barnes fumbles a lot. I mean, and they can't get the running game going at all. But I don't think that's going to happen. To me, Javonte Barnes is the one guy I think could really kind of put his stamp on that position, on his job going into next season.
Absolutely. And guys, there's a case to be made that they're better at right tackle than with Guyton than they are with Morris. Like, that's a reasonable conversation to have. So now, while left tackle, obviously, huge change. You're losing a potential first-round guy and replacing him with a true freshman. That is a massive ask of Jacob Sexton. If that's the way it goes, I know Aaron Parks is, you know, kind of part of that conversation as well, but I think we all expect it to be Jacob Sexton. So that's huge. And I don't know how you fix that hole, but there's a lot of experience at the other four positions. I mean, Guyton's played a lot of football this year and the other three guys have played a ton of football, period.
By the way, I want to remind you guys, deadsoxy.com. We've submitted the graphic for the unofficial 40 socks, so that should be coming in the next couple of months, hopefully. And you can go right now, use the promo code SCOOP, and get 25% off and free shipping on all orders. So your entire order, just go to deadsoxy.com, deadsoxy.com. Get the no-shows, get yourself some of the boardrooms, get yourself the crimson and cream pack to wear to game days. Just a great company, great socks. We've all worn them. Everybody that I know that's got them from hearing about them on the podcast says that they love them. So go check them out, deadsoxy.com. Use that promo code SCOOP and get 25% off your entire order. All right. Outside of all of that, the recruiting class, obviously very good based on a 6-6 season. And, I know I've seen some stuff from Miguel Chavis and, others that, kind of saying, hey, it's 2024's time here. But being in Orlando is probably not the worst thing for recruiting just because you have the Under Armour there and you have so many recruits or so many signees that are going to be playing in that game, Josh. To me, it's a real signal. And you just look at the rankings, but it's a signal that Oklahoma is still, a recruiting superpower even with a down season.
Oh, yeah. I mean, you look at what they've got. I mean, I was kind of working with somebody trying to find out some of the arrival information. You look at an Under Armour, PJ Adebare, Jackson Arnold, Peyton Bowen, Lewis Carter, Caden Green, Jacoby Johnson, Jaquez Pettaway, and Derek LeBlanc would be in the game if he wasn't, like we've talked about earlier, already part of, taking part in OU's practices and things. So there is, there's a lot. That's seven guys that are going to be part of this game. And really, frankly, the 3-5, the 2 5 stars in the class and PJ Adebare right there on the fringe, Caden Green as well. So it's a good statement of where Oklahoma is. And it never hurts to be in Orlando. Cause you get a lot of eyeballs from an area that Oklahoma recruits a ton. Obviously that's Derek LeBlanc's basically his hometown. So you get a lot of easy connections there and you get a lot of Tampa, Orlando talent. That's, whether it's them or their parents are watching the news at night, they see, everybody's gearing up for, probably not the Cheez-It Bowl, but hey, there probably is some mention of Oklahoma and Florida State, obviously with Florida State being such a pivotal part of that area.
I also wonder, I don't know the answer to this, but can like Jackson Arnold go to the game and be on the sideline?
I don't think he can be on the sideline, but obviously he can, he can go buy a ticket, go to the game. I'm sure he probably will. Cause that's the thing. I don't know if Eddie and Bob have started to notice it, but every year when I'm down there for Under Armour, you see I think it was 2 years ago, Penn State played down there. I think in the, maybe the Gator Bowl.
Citrus.
Yeah. And just hundreds of Penn State fans. It all just intertwines. It's all right there together because they all are doing the same stuff and they're all in the same hotels. It's very commingled. It's not such a big city that everybody's kind of off doing their own things. Everybody's together and you see signage for everything when you're around Orlando. I don't think he can be there based on the contact situation, even though he signed. I know there is an opening, a quiet period that changes things a little bit. Now but I don't think that's January 2nd or something. So, I don't think he can have any direct contact with the staff while he's there.
So let's explain kind of how it all works. What's the game day for that? I know the practices will start when you'll go down. Media day actually happens, some of it, the day that OU plays. But what's the schedule? What do you kind of get out of that? And when is that game?
Sure. So all the players start to arrive on Thursday, December 29th. December 29th. And they'll come in all sorts of various times. I've been there. I've flown in at like 7 a.m. and gotten over that media room and then sat there for like 5 hours waiting for the first OU, you know, related guys to show up. So that's always a little bit of a cluster. And obviously with all we've talked, we've had a lot of travel talk in this podcast. And I would expect, I mean, there's a lot, you know, guys, you're just talking about the list there. I mean, you've got guys coming in from Kansas City, guys coming in from Dallas, you know, all these places. So they could be coming in at any time because God knows what their travel looks like. And then you throw in a guy like Lewis Carter, who's just making the drive over from Tampa. Like what is he, you know, what's he going to do? So, or, you know, when does he arrive? But then they'll have that day. Like I said, it's just media days. And then they go through, you know, basic meetings and stuff like that the night before. And then the following night, which will be Friday the 30th, they'll have their first practice, which is that evening over on the Wide World of Sports there on Disney's campus. And I'll be there for that. I'll go through the first practice. And that's usually the one I'm there for. I usually do media day and that first night practice. But I always kind of hate what I get, like as far as video and pictures. Like it's never good because it's really dark. You'd think a Disney production, it would be really well lit. And it's just, it's not. So the following day, I'm going to stay around for an afternoon practice, catch all that, and then I will head back. But so we should have pictures, video, hoping to speak to all the guys, do interviews with all of them, and just kind of, you know, catch up and get a little bit of a feel for what that's like as those guys go through it. And, you know, most of these guys, I mean, you talk about it, Atabari, Arnold, Bowen, Green, and Petaway, not Petaway. And I can't remember if Jacoby Johnson's an early enrollee or not. I'm trying to pull up my list real quick.
I don't believe he's not.
Of course he's not, because he's playing basketball. No. He's playing basketball. Yeah. So there are, you know, five or six of these guys. This is their last real high school moment. I mean, they're going to do this and then just move on to Oklahoma in a couple of weeks. So it's kind of always interesting to have those conversations and just, you know, see what their kind of final thoughts are, because we won't get to talk to them again for a little while.
Yeah, I'm just looking. The 5 o'clock. I don't know if that's Central or Eastern. I think that's Eastern. So it should be, what, 4 o'clock on Tuesday, January 3rd on ESPN.
Yes, yes. I think that time is Central, because four Central on January 3rd would be kind of like on a Tuesday would be kind of weird, yeah. But it's possible, but I don't know that for sure. Sorry, I know you asked me about the date and I forgot to list that part.
I tried to get you.
Yeah.
Pick you up. Yeah, you know, all this money you're spending right now.
Oh.
I don't stress.
Yeah, I mean, I currently have 2 flights to Orlando. No, not a lot of people can say that.
Eddie and Bob have 2 flights to Oklahoma City. I think I know which one they're going to use. It's not going to be the Southwest one.
I mean, do you guys want to live dangerously and just keep the Southwest? We'll cancel the other and just go for it. After all you've been through, it seems like that's, you know, well worth your time to live that risk.
Eddie would bring that car, that rental car, back looking like when Cole Trickle and Rowdy Gaines went to go eat dinner together. That's what that car would look like.
I believe one of those was a Malibu. It's our second Malibu reference of the podcast.
So, yeah. Outside of that, I noticed, Texas coming up for Oklahoma in basketball. Bob, that's a big one.
It is. That'll be New Year's Eve at 1. We're going to do a Zoom call with Porter Moser tomorrow, because I don't think we'll all be back in town in time Friday for do something in person. So we're going to do a Zoom probably from Camping World Stadium to talk to Porter about getting ready for the Horns and just what's he thought about what the Big 12 was able to accomplish in the non-conference. I'm sure it doesn't surprise him. But, man, it's just like it is every single year. It is going to be one heck of a grind to try to make the tournament. And they're going to have to do some work in conference, because they did not move the needle this year whatsoever based on the wins they had during the non-conference portion.
Guessing Chris Beard won't be back no matter how many people try and drop charges.
That'll be interesting. You know, will that eventually catch up to the Horns? It almost did that one game against Rice, and they were able to get through that, and then they've been, you know, smooth sailing in every other game. You know, can OU be the first team to really attack the fact that no one knows what the heck's going to be happening with Beard throughout the rest of the season? You know, first game of conference, can you jump on them early and get that win under your belt, have that in your bag as you go throughout the rest of the season?
And we'll try and figure out exactly how the post game is going to work. I mean, maybe the fact that this game starts at 4:30 will allow us to do something the night of the game. So Eddie and I will kind of work that out as we go along. I'm not sure if we still have Eddie with us or not.
No, I'm
okay,
here.
You're there. All right.
Yeah, I'm here.
So yeah, we'll have our final Eskridge Lexus post game after the game at some point. We'll figure it out with all the everything that's going on. So. I would just
kinda
say,
crazy. Josh, I just real quick, Josh, I know that you put some stuff in woke just as far as transfer portal stuff. It's going to be interesting. Brent said something today at the joint press conference. And I don't think that it was necessarily any type of breaking news, but talking about 35 new faces in the program, that would be on top of the, you know, the guys that they obviously just signed, but it seems like they're still going to continue to be active in that regard. And, you know, obviously Trace Ford and what his decision is going to be coming up, it should be kind of interesting to watch there.
Well, and I think some of what Woke talked about, without getting into too much of it, is there's at least one guy that a lot of people had connected to Oklahoma that I don't think Oklahoma is going to have room for. And it's not because Oklahoma doesn't want him, but they're, and again, to kind of further, you know, another storyline that I think is interesting in it, is there was some talk of kind of an NIL balance, like using the NIL rather than having the, you know, the scholarship to give. And the player that I'm talking about doesn't really want to do that from everything I've gathered, but it does speak to Oklahoma, while not perfect in that arena, they're trying to get their ducks in a row. They're starting to use that avenue to do, you know, more intricate things and not just, oh, you know, we got to get this player handled or this recruit. Like, they're trying to use it in various ways. And I think that's interesting. But again, what it speaks to in a bigger picture to me is that Oklahoma doesn't think they have that many spots. Like, they clearly have some, you know, they think some of these fifth year guys or some of these guys that still have the COVID year available are going to come back. They think there's some of that potential. So there is, I don't think, you know, I've seen some people saying like, oh, they could get 10 or 12 guys out of the portal. As I look at it, I don't know that that's going to be right. Like, it may be 5 to 7, somewhere in that ballpark, but I don't think there's going to be this massive overhaul unless there are a couple of guys that enter the portal that are just no doubt these guys can help the roster kind of types.
Oh, God. I'm just reading Robert Allen's take on the Mike Gundy reporter debacle.
It's the definition of the chef's kiss. That is, it's almost too good. I hope he wins a Pulitzer Prize for it.
It's too on brand. I didn't know that could be a thing, but it's too perfect.
I mean, it's at least worth the $25 gift card to Perkins in Stillwater.
People, that's a question you have to ask Mike Gundy. You have
f***ing softball question of all softball questions when it comes to hard questions. Just asking a guy.
And he didn't even ask it aggressively. I thought he was overly, right, almost meek about it.
He was like, you have to understand.
He gave him an out.
Yeah, you have to understand, Mike, because of all the things that have gone on, that people are questioning if you're going to make any staff changes. Are you? Like, my God.
They just lost 6 of 7.
Yeah, they started out 6-1, finished 7-6.
To a school that fired their coach in midseason.
They have a quarterback who started there for 4 years that doesn't believe that the program is good enough to highlight his skill set as much as it can. I mean, like, you can't fuck up more than that as an offense. Like, to have a guy that's in your system, that knows your system, that looks at it and says, yeah, I need to go somewhere else to reach my full potential. Like, nobody's been hard on him about that. Like, I watched that game last night from beginning to end, and the reporters that brought it up, they were like making it out like just taking Mike Gundy's his spin on it and putting it out there as the national narrative. Like, I'm sorry, nobody's pressed him on this, but that is a massive failure of a coaching staff to lose your starting quarterback of 4 years to the transfer portal. And he's not even good enough to go to the NFL.
Not to mention who's probably the best quarterback in school history other than the head coach himself. Or at least winningest.
Well, yeah, I mean, I'd say Brandon Whedon, you know, is up there just because
he won a championship. Whedon was probably a better quarterback, right. But he also had better tools.
But he didn't have the longevity, right?
Sure,
because there was better recruiting happening around him.
100%, and that's part of the problem. They're 6-7, they went 7-6 and lost 6-7 because of depth. Well, who the fuck? I mean, who recruited those problems?
Well, or lack thereof. They don't want to recruit. They don't want to worry about the portal.
Yeah, they don't want to talk their players into coming back. I mean,
what are you doing up there? Like, what is it that's making all this money?
And to call the guy an ass and ignorant for asking that question, that was a more than legitimate, fair question.
And those guys do a great job. Their business is dedicated. It's like us. It's good for them when they win. Like, he's not out to get anybody.
Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah, none of us suck his dick
like Robert Allen does.
Well, I mean, he's on the payroll, so, I mean, you got to realize
exactly.
That.
Like, it's crazy to me.
And that is the thing you do have to consider with those things. Like, there is a line that we can go across that I would, if I was employed by OU, I would feel differently about. Like, I understand that. That's okay. But at the same time, like, you have to acknowledge it when things are like this and just be like, you know what, I'm just going to stay out of that game. I'm just not, like, I don't have to say something. I don't have to be a sunshine pumper. But at the same time, I can just not say anything. That's okay, too.
It would have been on if a coach called me an ass for that question, because then I would have taken the opportunity to earn that name that I was just called. And I would point out the whole Spencer Sanders deal. And I would point out the whole, you know, losing coordinators. I would point out, you know, starting 6-1 and finishing 7-6. I would point out their inability to keep a running back or offensive line intact. Like, that's all on the offense. It's just like I say with OU fans all the time. They're not stupid. They can see that things are screwed up on the offensive line, and they have been for years. They can see that they start out with a running back, and they never finish with the running back because they don't pick the right ones when the season starts. Like, that happens every year. It's just like there are massive, massive problems right now for Oklahoma State on the offensive side of the ball, and they've been lucky that their defense has covered up for them the last few years.
Guys, and it's the same shit I said when everybody got mad about Deion being so direct with the players. This is not like – these are grown men. They know the game they're in. They know it's a results organization. They know that this business isn't about like, oh, we're going to protect the family. Stop. Stop with that. Like, no. Like, I get that in that question, he's not – nobody's expecting him to say, okay, we're going to fire the offensive coordinator and the receivers. Like, nobody's expecting that answer. You can do three things. You can give a real answer without itemizing your list, but you can say, yeah, you know, we do, things weren't where they needed to be in certain aspects of our team. We're going to address those, you know, and you don't have to say somebody's going to be fired. Like, we're going to address the problems however we feel is the best way to do so. You can give a non-answer that's like, oh, we want to worry about our seniors and we want to, you know, we're going to address that when the time's right. Or you can pivot to a pivot to something like, oh, you know, like, this is Oklahoma State football's, you know, more than one game. We don't want to be reactionary, blah, blah, blah. There's a million ways you can answer that question without being a shitheel to the kid or to the guy that asked the question. The one I saw was O'Colley, and so I keep thinking it was a college student, but I know it wasn't.
No, it was a pistols firing blog. Yeah.
Yeah. And it just, it like, I don't even mind, like, because I get that it's a tough question. So if Mike Gundy's going to come at me with a tough answer, okay, that's life.
You know what else he did? He waited till the end of the
credential. F*** off with that stuff.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, to threaten your credential. I mean, that was the most. And the guy did exactly what he does, and I tell young journalists this all the time. It's okay to ask that question. Wait till the end of a press conference to ask that question. Don't derail an entire, especially the last press conference of the year. And that's the thing. People are like, oh, it's not the place for it. That's exactly the place for it. It's the final press conference of the year. It's the final game of the year. You lost. You're going into an offseason. You don't know when you're going to talk to Mike Gundy again. It might be a month. So that's when you ask those questions. And I said this on Twitter. After that 2014, when it was the Russell Athletic Bowl, I asked Josh Heupel if he thought he would be returning to be the offensive coordinator next year. And it was uncomfortable. I didn't want to, it wasn't pleasant. Didn't enjoy it. Didn't do it for shits and giggles. I did it because it needed to be asked to get his reaction. And his reaction was, I don't know, basically. And that
you just heard Kerry threaten my job on the podcast. So, I mean, I can take it. It's fine.
I don't want to do this job if you're not around. I'm going to fly to Orlando. It was a huge mistake by Mike Gundy in the way he handled it. He made it a big deal when it didn't have to be. And that's the biggest mistake of all. Like, you're a head coach, you're getting paid millions of dollars. Just you're not Kerry Murdoch sitting around fighting with people on Twitter. You are the CEO of Oklahoma State football. Like, you got to know that to minimize it and just get that past you and give the answer like you said. And
the bottom line is, he answered it anyway. The way he answered it is like, shit, people are getting fired. Like, because if either not, you just say, no, we're happy with where we're at. Like, you don't answer like that if it's all good. You know what the answer is. And I just don't know what he accomplished other than making the reporter look like the good guy and him look like an ass.
Well, let's face it. I mean, like the whole, people's livelihood and stuff like that. Like, we're talking about fan bases that boo players. Like, Spencer Rattler got booed. Like, he wasn't making $1 million. I mean, these coaches, they get paid tens of millions of dollars to leave in some cases. Which we all would love that. I'll take that. I would love to be Auburn's head coach and get fired in 2 years.
Oh, they could hate me like Brian Harsin forever. That's fine. Just burn my pictures at Auburn, and I'll be on an island somewhere. I won't even know what you're doing.
So, yeah, it was just stupid. I mean, I woke up to that this morning. I went to bed as soon as the game was over. But waking up to that, it was just like, oh, my God, what have you done, Mike Gundy? He's really – here's Mike Gundy. The perfect description for Mike Gundy? He's a poor man's Kim Mulkey. He does all the same shit, and it's petty, and it's stupid, and it doesn't need to be done, but he does it anyway. He just does it at a much less competent level.
Not a bad comparison. And they both want Brittany Griner to die.
Yeah.
God.
Kim Mulkey won't even waste a breath. Kim Mulkey won't even waste her breath to even acknowledge Brittany Griner anymore.
Yeah.
Yeah, he's a poor man's Kim Mulkey. Congratulations, Mike Gundy. What an aspirational achievement.
Beautiful.
All right. Well, guys, looking forward to the coverage has been great. The travel is not. I'm glad you guys were there, and we'll hope to get you guys back home after this thing is over. Hopefully it's not a shit show. Josh, we'll we need to make you're not Catholic, so Eddie would have to come here and make, what do you call that, an altar where you light the candles?
I mean, the only time we've ever seen Eddie host a religious experience, someone had died, so I don't know that I want Eddie leading anything like that.
I think Jeff Ketchum is back to life. Is he not, Eddie? Was he resurrected?
He's back. We might have to end up staying with him in Austin if we make it through.
Your connecting flight is through Austin. I saw stories from the Statesman yesterday. There, that's a shit show there too.
Yeah, it's not great. It's not great.
Don't worry, we're emptying our bank accounts to make sure you have another flight home. So, all right,
we'll be good. I think we'll be good.
Well, looking forward to it tomorrow, 4:30, kickoff on ESPN, Florida State, Oklahoma. All the media is over, so now it is time for you guys to go find the has the hospitality room any good there?
Haven't been up there once.
Don't know yet. Yeah.
Yeah, it's we haven't been up there.
It's only open at night, but it wasn't open yesterday because of Topgolf was the media party, so they didn't have the room open.
Interesting. Did either of you partake in Topgolf?
We did.
We went over there for a second.
We went for an hour.
Well, good. I'm glad you're finding
it's
some.
It's a pretty light media contingent.
Yeah, there's not exactly a whole bunch of OU media here yet.
Yeah, I think has there been any word if Trammell's going to even be able to get out there? Because he was doing the.
He's trying to tomorrow.
He was doing the I'm coming out on Wednesday.
Oh, yeah, today. He's trying to today. We'll see. I think we're all waiting.
Everyone that's coming out today is not on Southwest. So that's why no one's nearly as worried for Bailey, Chapman, Barry.
Okay.
They're not flying south on Southwest.
They're all smart enough to switch. I just want to know if we're going to get our money back. That's all I really care about, which probably won't. So class action, I'm going to double up on Camp Lejeune and Southwest class action lawsuits.
Pay for you might need to.
All right, that's going to do it for us. We'll be back again next week, big season wrap-up edition of the Unofficial 40 Podcast. We'll have more from Josh's time in Orlando at the All-American Game. Looking forward to seeing that on television, and Jackson Arnold and all the other OU, Peyton Bowen, all the other OU guys that are going to be in that one. So thank you for listening. We'll be back again in another week for next edition of the Unofficial 40 Podcast from Soonerscoop.com.